This is the People Show coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. Israel Fair back in for Bick Nizar to close out the week. Bick getting another day off. A deserved day off.
I don't know about that.
We'll call it.
I don't know if it's deserved.
Back-to-back Canucks games this weekend. Again, kind of a weird scheduling quirk. Last weekend, Saturday, Sunday. This weekend, Saturday, Sunday.
And an early start in Chicago, too.
An early start in Chicago. I guess national TV reasons. But yes, no Bick today. So it's me to close out the week. Dom's here.
Hi.
No guests today.
No.
No guests.
Everyone was like, is he? No, I'm good.
Friday afternoon, they had better things to do with their time. But please, text us.
Text us.
650-650. It's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you. In Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Yes, do text in. We have a few things to chew on, though. Canucks game last night, big win against a San Jose Sharks team that has been abysmal in the calendar year, especially since they traded Timo Meier. They have been brutal, and they showed it last night. But the Canucks keep rolling, the Canucks keep winning, and the big story on the ice, and we'll get to some of the on-the-ice stuff. We certainly will have at least a portion of the show to reminisce and have some John Garrett memories, although he's not officially gone yet. Still, the rest of the regional games on television as part of the broadcast crew with John Shorthouse. But we will chew on that a little bit, the announcement in the third period yesterday that this will be John Garrett's last season as the color commentator on the Sportsnet regional broadcast. But on the ice, Filip Hronek, the debut. Spent quite a bit of time talking about that this week, what that might look like. Not the toughest opponent in the world, certainly not the most high-stakes game in the world either. Have to be pretty impressed by Hronek's debut. Looked like the real deal.
Steady Eddie.
Comes in, hasn't played in over 3 weeks because of the injury. Plays a bunch of minutes, leads the team in ice time after Christian Willanen goes down injured. Great, you know, real solid.
Kind of came as advertised, no?
Yeah.
Smooth skater, you know, can't carry a defense pair on his own, but, like, you can tell, like, what the attributes are there, what the reasons are for why they acquired him in the first place. Jamie made a great point earlier on Canucks Talk. Mm-hmm. He's that guy that's going to take the pressure off Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
Knightley in the lineup. I know people hate the price tag, but, I mean, come on, that's the price tag for a right-hand defenseman. A right shot defenseman in the NHL.
Yeah.
And look at what you're getting. I know it's the San Jose Sharks. We have to take it with a grain of salt, or at least make that a factor. But you definitely are starting to understand why they paid what they paid to get him.
That is the cost, for sure, for a right shot guy. And I know some of the analysis coming out of the game was just, yeah, he can really make those outlet passes, those passes out of the zone to start quick offense. And that's just so key for defensemen in the NHL today. Yes, Quinn Hughes does it at about as high a level as defensemen in the league, where he can, his ability to turn defense into offense because of his skating is unbelievable, and to also pick out those passes. But what we saw from Hronek, kind of more in some subtle ways too, just being able to read on the ice, okay, the Sharks are shifted on, you know, weak side, strong side. I'm gonna shift the puck, or I'm gonna pass it over to the weak side and be able to make that pass. I think it's in a lot of ways what people had been hoping that Tyler Myers was gonna be. And Tyler Myers has a skill set. It's just not that skill set. And so yeah, adding Hronek there, and having him play, jump into the lineup with
versatile too. Well, like they put him in a bunch of positions
last night. You saw him on the power play.
Yeah.
With Quinn Hughes. Play with Quinn Hughes at 5-on-5 a bit. Saw him play with Ethan Bear. And to give Bear some credit, and he's had some moments for the Canucks this season. Plays on the left side. So Ronek can play on the right side, which is, like you said, Dom, the reason you get him. He's a legitimate top four right shot guy. Yeah, I think you have to be pretty happy with that. And the other standout thing beyond, you know, it's been the week of JT Miller in some respects, another highlight reel goal for him. It's the players at the bottom of the lineup. And it's not necessarily going to translate to next season. But someone like Dakota Joshua scores a really nice goal.
Buzzer beater.
Gets it in, you know, seconds left, before. Yeah. And he's a guy that's been really solid for this team this year. In that fourth line role, you're not asking for much more than that. There were times where that line was rolling. This is more kind of earlier in the season when Bruce Boudreau was still the coach. But he brings something to the table. Same with Dan Riccio's favorite player, PDG. Right?
Di Giuseppe, yeah.
He has shown in a smaller sample that there's something there. And it's nice to see, it's nice to know that there are players like that that can fill a role, and that while it hasn't been necessarily a steady progression from the last management team with Jim Benning to this one for a number of reasons, at least that part of it seems secured. Not overpaying for bottom six players that can fill those roles. I think you could say the same thing for Christian Wolanin, who just signed an extension prior to the game. Now he's hurt. No word on whether he'll play this weekend or what his status is for the rest of the season. But he's another guy who's come up after having some strong play in Abbotsford and shown we don't have to throw a bunch of money at these positions. These players can play their role, play the standard, the system that we're looking to have here, and then you can worry about some of the other pieces. Again, that's not going to mean that everything has been a steady transition over the last year plus now, but that is at least one area I think that you can look at as being being an improvement. I mean, you look at San Jose now, that's a real team that is looking at a real rebuild. They are, of course, lower in the standings than the Canucks. They have a shot at the number one pick that would probably change their direction a little bit. But they do find themselves in a pretty similar position to what the Canucks have been in, certainly were in a few years ago. Some veterans on big contracts, not necessarily having, in their case, not having a goaltending option of the future immediately. And that's where the Erik Karlsson question is fascinating, because it does seem like, it seemed like heading toward the deadline, that while the Oilers indicated that it was unlikely to happen this year, or like at the deadline, that they would very much like to revisit the Erik Karlsson idea in the summer. But since they added Mattias Ekholm, they've been really good. They to me, and I've been someone who's been pretty skeptical on the Oilers at a lot of times. I felt that way this season when they came in with a lot of hype. I had questions about the decor. I had some questions about the depth forwards. We know how incredible Connor McDavid is, Leon Draisaitl is, and that McDavid has leveled up even more is all the more impressive, and huge credit to him. But now I'm curious if the Oilers feel the same way, or maybe it will come down to the playoffs. But that contract on Karlsson is huge, and what we saw from the Sharks is that they're not close. Even if they win the lottery, draft Connor Bedard, I don't imagine that that's going to be a super seamless transition, even with the number one pick. But someone from the Sharks did stand out to me for the Canucks. If they are going to try to beef up that bottom pair, not the bottom pair, the bottom six, I think Nico Sturm is a really interesting player. He's someone that they've signed. So he's on the first year of a three-year contract. And he's been one of the better players for the Sharks this year. Consistency's been there. He's not the flashiest player in the world. But if he's going to fill a role, and he's already under contract for two more seasons, and the Sharks are selling. And one thing that was interesting about San Jose at the deadline was that they're trying to play a similar game to what the Canucks have done. they are not doing a mega rebuild. And they traded Timo Meier, and you could say in a similar way to the Canucks trading Bo Horvat. Now, Bo Horvat had the captaincy. Bo Horvat had some other things in his favor that Meier didn't. But I think evaluating them as players, Timo Meier is a slightly higher, more higher-end player, more impact player than Bo Horvat. They decide to make that move, but they're not selling everything off. Quite frankly, their assets, their veteran assets that they have, Carlson included, for as great of a season that he's had, they don't have the obvious selling players, and they traded a few of them. They traded Nick Bonino, for example, but they talked a lot about, hey, we got to maintain the culture here a little bit. We got to keep some of these players around, that when our young players are going to come up, they're going to have that professional environment and things like that. And the Sharks are in a management group that's even more fresh than the Canucks, with Mike Greer taking over for Doug Wilson in the summer, who he's not even done his first year with the Sharks as the general manager. But yeah, look, Nico Sturm could be an interesting fit. And it is a point here with this Canucks team. They're putting up these goals, which they've done for a lot of the season. They're winning these games toward the end of the year. And it is an interesting reaction in the arena, where I think now, because we've reached the point where there's under a month left in the season, and the Bedard dream is pretty much dead, the people are, at least the fans that can go both ways, there's going to be the fans that are completely committed to the idea that this team needs to sell everything, do a pretty aggressive rebuild. But anyone that is past that line, that is either a fully optimistic fan or a fan that it could go either way, there seems to be some buy-in that, look, give them a chance to play this out, look at the positive parts of it, and maybe some belief that this offseason brings on some more moves. Because I do think that more than anything, and it's hard to say that this is more than the losing at the beginning of the season, because that was hugely disappointing. And given the way that the management had talked about this season, hard to read, because there were some warning signs on one end with the way that they talked about Bruce Boudreau not being fully committed to that idea, working for this team, but also saying, hey, we want to compete this year. So when they go off to that start, that's really disappointing. But what my reaction, or my read of the fan base in a lot of ways, was, well, we need to see something happen. We need to see one of these trades. And finally, the Bo Horvat trade happens, and the team has been better since then. And it's not necessarily going one way or the other. I'm not saying that the team is better because Bo Horvat's not here, but that is at least one domino. And maybe this offseason there might be some more dominoes in terms of moves.
Sportsnet 650, breaking news.
Izzy, breaking news out of Aspen. Arizona Coyotes co-owner and hedge fund manager Andrew Barraway has been arrested in Aspen and spent the night in Picton County Jail after police arrested him downtown hotel for felony strangulation charges. He's posted a $2,500 personal bail. This according to Aspen Daily News. The story breaking in the last hour. From Aspen Daily News.
Okay.
So the co-owner of the Coyotes. Not a good look. Another terrible look for the Arizona Coyotes in the NHL.
Yeah, it's been a good week for the NHL, eh, Dom?
Just to add to it, there is a picture of Andrew in the jail cell. So this looks legitimate.
All right. There you go.
I can't imagine the NHL has got much more patience with this situation.
They have given text here from Minor Matt, which is fair. Give them a chance. Have you been paying attention to the last decade in regards to my take on the Canucks? Fair. I think that the NHL has given the Coyotes even more chances than I'm allowing for Canucks fans to do so. On the topic of controversy, Dom, today ESPN announced the 30 for 30, but the riots, the 2011 Game 7 Stanley Cup Final riot.
Yeah, for a friend of the show, Cat Jamie,
yeah,
directing.
That is going to be interesting.
Very much so. Kat and Asia doing yeoman's work with this 30 for 30 documentary. Kat obviously has had two very successful Grizzlies documentaries already done. So her third venture into documenting Vancouver sports moments. I'm very interested to see now with the financial backing of ESPN what they can come up with this documentary. Because it's a day that a lot of people in this city will not forget. A lot of people in this city were down there, including myself. And it was a dark time. It was a very dark time. I remember coming downtown the next day because I went to school on Seymour and around Seymour in Georgia, right around there. And you could smell the scent of like burning asphalt and the cars like that were still there. It was just a very ominous day following the riots, and I'm very interested to see all the images and video that they have uncovered, because apparently it will be shot through the lens of everyone's cell phone footage from that night.
Right. Yeah, a lot of kind of on the ground reporting, if you will. And yeah, for sure. And if in this city, or if you're a Canucks fan, but certainly if you were here, everybody has a story from that day. But reading the press release from ESPN, I'm trying to parse, trying to figure out what the angle is going to be, where they're, or how they're going to frame it. So the name is, quote, "I'm just here for the riot,"
yeah,
which tells me something.
I think that's a famous quote
from that day.
From one of the rioters, yeah.
Okay. And that's obviously like kind of a subplot that, or even, you know, conspiracy, whatever you want, that there were a lot of people there who weren't interested in the hockey game and that were,
that knew that something was going down and they just wanted to
cause
some trouble.
That there was that energy in the city that people knew. And we were talking about it pre-show as we were preparing for the show. I don't have memories of 1994. I was too young. But I grew up hearing about 1994.
Same.
And what I heard, you know, beyond Lafayette's post and the things like that, some of the on-ice stuff, probably the thing that, it might be second after the post, honestly, was videos of cop cars being flipped. And the vibe was always, and I don't know what this says about Vancouver, but this is the way that it was, I interpreted it. The young people were like, if we get a chance to have our moment like that, we want it. And that's not not excusing what happened. And
yeah,
I'm very curious to see how they put all of that video, I guess, that they've gotten. Yeah. And like the press release here says that production is complete. So they've put this together already. How they take that video
and turn it into a story.
And of course, I'm sure. So it sounds like a lot of the early stuff is going to be cell phone cameras. But of course, once the riot really popped off, all the news organizations and stuff were on the scenes as well. How they are able to put that stuff together and the story that they're going to be trying to tell. I do think that there is an interesting insight into Canucks fans and into Vancouver that can be told by such an event. And it is a defining one. I moved to Toronto for university, for college, that summer. And with every interaction, the first month that I lived there, when I told someone I was from Vancouver, the first question, every time, were you in the riots? Were you in the riots? It was international news.
Definitely. I still remember I was downtown on Georgia Street watching on the main big screen, and it was so packed, shoulder to shoulder, you couldn't really sit on Georgia. Everyone was forced to stand, even those who brought camping chairs and carpets and those sorts of things to try and sit and watch the game were kind of ended up forced to stand because it was so, it was like herding cattle. It was so packed in there. And I do remember after the 4-0 goal, there was just this overwhelming feeling of angst and anger that was flowing through the crowd on West Georgia. And you could just tell people were starting to get angry. And, you know, you can feel it sometimes, like the energy around you when it's just turned negative and you can tell people are not having a good time. People start throwing beer at the TV screens. I remember one of the beers hit the actual screen and like broke one of the panels on the TV. It's at that moment that we decide, hey, maybe we should start walking back towards the Canada line, because mm-hmm. if things start to pop off, don't want to be in the middle of it.
No, definitely not.
But it was such it turned so negative so quickly because how the game unfolded, and it just felt like everyone had this moment of like, oh, here we go again. It's about to happen. Riot's going to start happening. Because going into that day, I don't know if it was the same for you. Going into that day, my friends certainly and my classmates, everyone was like, do you think there'll be a riot tonight?
Oh, yeah. It was a topic.
Do you think there'll be a riot? The second they started losing and you could kind of tell like, oh, this is.
It was a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. The whole mood of the city changed. And I remember going back to Van Arts, because that's where I was going to school at the time. Mm-hmm. We were on like the sixth or seventh floor. And I'm looking down at Seymour, trying to decide whether or not to head home or stay downtown and just like wait it out. And I remember just looking down at Seymour, and it was young people. Let's not mince words here. It wasn't older folk. A lot of young people walking back from West Georgia, and even before things really popped off, were grabbing like garbage cans and the newspaper stands, everything, and just starting to hurl stuff into the street and destroy stuff. And you just knew, even before the game ended, something bad's gonna happen. Like, the energy in the city turned so negative so quickly, and it's such a dark day for the city. And I remember when I left using the Canada line, I remember getting images on Twitter of like plumes of smoke billowing out of Vancouver, and I'm thinking to myself, like, man, like this is my home. This is happening right now. It just felt so surreal.
Like you mentioned, one of the directors is Kat Jamie, who's come onto the scene with a couple of Vancouver Grizzlies documentaries. The first one about Bryant Reeves, Big Country Reeves, and then the most recent one about the Grizzlies' exit, which I recently watched. And what I found to be, calling it the best part is not quite fair, but I guess what resonated the most with me about the latest one was her ability to replicate and bring back to life the energy of going to Grizzlies games. I thought that she did an excellent job of capturing that, whether it was the old clips that they had, but also talking to people about what made going to Grizzlies games special. Because for me, going to Grizzlies games as a kid was something that I cherish to this day, but at the time, I'd never experienced. I knew I was experiencing something that wasn't usual. But I didn't, as a 6-year-old, have an ability to articulate it. So to see that in the documentary is like, oh, there really was that kind of energy. And that she was able to put that in the documentary and get me to feel that way again, I thought was really well done. I wasn't there downtown on June 15th, 2011. But if this documentary about the riot is going to be anything like that, and is going to capture that kind of energy, as malevolent as it might be, as you're describing, Dom, like, you know, everybody that was there has a story or something that they saw that made them think, something off could happen. And when there's 100,000 people in the city and most of those people have seen something, it can end up being what played out. But that will be interesting. No details about a run date or anything like that, but an unusual, I guess, announcement, or something unexpected, an unexpected announcement to get that today. And those documentaries, still, the 30 for 30s, they've been going on for a while now.
They're all so well done.
and they carry some weight.
Yeah.
So that'll be something to watch out for when it happens.
I'm curious what kind of emotion, like you're saying, I am curious what kind of emotions it will elicit from Vancouverites and people who live in the Lower Mainland. Because it was such a black eye.
It was definitely a source of embarrassment.
Yeah.
And there was never any explanation that sat well with people, regardless of which side you were on.
Yeah.
And how they explore that, how they decide to parse that out.
Very interesting.
And it's in the release from ESPN. Why do we get so caught up in the emotions of winning and losing? Why do normal people sometimes run amok and do things they regret? So that tells me that inside the framing is going to be the game, the result, a team that everyone at that point, or maybe not heading into game seven because there was certainly some nervousness, but heading into the playoffs and had built up to the point where they've got to finally win this thing, and they don't create that kind of reaction. Vancouver on the world stage, that has created stuff like the Olympics, which people have very fond memories of, and look at that as, hey, you travel across the world, people bring up Vancouver, oh, the place where they had the Olympics, that's so great. A year later, this happens, and it definitely created another sort of reaction.
I don't know if this was like this for you, but certainly for me, the game wasn't even over yet, and I had already forgotten that they had just lost the Stanley Cup final. I don't know if it, like, maybe because you weren't downtown,
yeah.
I don't know if it was the same for you or for others, but I just remember like the next day waking up and being like, oh yeah, we lost game seven. Like, it became so secondary.
Once I found, because I didn't know right away.
Right.
But once I found out that night or later in that evening that what was happening, then that definitely went front of mind and kind of in a lot of ways superseded the hockey part of it, for better or worse, probably for worse. But yeah, that'll be interesting to see when that runs. And Vancouver will be on the world stage from ESPN 30 for 30. Sure, the guys on the station here will continue to cover that when more information comes up as that documentary, as we get closer to that airing, and keep all of you updated on that. All right, coming up next, we'll do a little baseball talk. We're less than a week away from opening day. Blue Jays and Mariners announced their opening day starters. We'll go back and forth on which of those teams is better suited to going on a run this year. And as mentioned, do a little segment on John Garrett, share some memories of growing up watching him with John Shorthouse and Jim Houston as well in the Canucks broadcast booth. This is the People's Show, the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the People's Show, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Israel Fair here as Bick Nazar enjoying a day off before another Canucks weekend back-to-back. Chicago, Dallas, one team pretty good, one team not so good in there. See if the Canucks continue their winning ways over the weekend. We were just getting a little bit nostalgic, kind of on the negative side of Canucks fandom. The end of the last segment, talking about a forthcoming ESPN 30 for 30 documentary about the 2011 riots. In a moment, we'll get nostalgic on the more positive side with some memories, recollections of John Garrett, who announced during the third period of last night's game on the television broadcast, the Sportsnet regional broadcast, that this would be his last season as part of the booth with John Shorthouse. But first, Sportsnet 650 is proud to be a sponsor of the 30th annual RBC JCC Sports Dinner, where champions come to give back on Tuesday, March 28th at the Hyatt Regency. Be a part of the excitement with live and silent auctions, a luxury Cadillac raffle, and a 50-50 draw. This year's guest speaker is Rob Gronkowski. Nice get. sponsored by ZLC Financial. Check out the events page at sportsnet.ca/650 to purchase tickets for the JCC Sports Dinner Raffle, the Gronk.
I got to hold your feet to the fire.
Yes.
Zed.
I know.
We're in Canada, buddy.
Yes, yeah. Well, first time doing the read, so that was a...
Yes, because it's also the first time you've said the letter.
Caught me by surprise, to be perfectly honest. Doesn't usually show up in copy, that letter.
I don't think he'll be Gronk, that is, crushing beers that night. I think he'll keep it profesh.
He's still a good time. Doesn't need to be. He doesn't need to be on the booze train.
I actually heard. I was listening to a podcast recently with him on it, and he actually admitted that he's been toning it down quite a bit, trying to recover his body from years of. I think, as he put it, a car accident every play.
Played a physical sport, physical guy, physical position. Retired twice? Once for sure.
Three times, who knows?
Yeah, he retired a lot. He didn't go to the dark room to contemplate his decision either.
No. I'm sure he's been to some dark places.
That's just your future hero.
Oh, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Do you think you, I'll get to the John Garrett in a sec, but did you jinx Rhys Hoskins with your t-shirt?
I hardly think that has anything to do with it. I really feel bad. Like a spring training accident like that, your knee just crumbles underneath you, you sprain your ACL.
Yeah, Phillies first baseman Rhys Hoskins out for the season, torn ACL in a spring training
game. Oh, is it for
the
season?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I believe I saw that this morning.
That sucks.
Good player.
Yeah. Home run machine.
Yeah.
That does suck. He's my favorite player, actually, of all the Phillies. So.
Okay.
Sucks. Nice.
Okay, yes, John Garrett. A lot of people with a lot of emotions last night. A lot of tributes already. I'll be the latest. Add me to the list. Dom, please feel free to chime in as well.
Yeah, A to Z, yeah.
Yeah. Tributes from A to Z. Or Z. No Zeds or Zs in Garrett. Or ketchup.
No. Pour some ketchup out for Cheech.
But I will say, so I grew up in Vancouver. I guess more specifically North Vancouver, but I grew up in the area. I grew up watching the Canucks when I was a kid. The team was pretty good for the duration of that time. And watching the Canucks, watching every game was just what we did, what we grew up doing. It was, you know, three or four times a week, come home from school, do your homework or go to sports practice and come home and watch the Canucks. And John Garrett was a huge part of that, a big part of that fabric. And I was reflecting after seeing his announcement. What was it that made that connection special? I think above all, above the professionalism, which is been there the whole time. And hockey is interesting because most hockey fans watch their team's broadcasts and they will catch the occasional, in Canada anyway, hockey night broadcast with other broadcasters. But you're not necessarily, unless you are a super fan, you have center ice, you have the Sportsnet package, watching regional broadcasts elsewhere. And this isn't even just hockey related. I think if you watch other sports and you catch regional broadcasts from outside your region, you can start to see that what the television broadcast with the Canucks has had is pretty special. The production value is quite high. And I think when you're just a regional watcher, you're just the regional audience, maybe, I don't think people take it for granted, but you just get used to that standard. But inside of that, I think for me it was, and this is with John Garrett working with Jim Houston or working with John Shorthouse now over the last number of years, that it was there's such a comfort level with those two in the booth that you were going to get a game that was called with all the information that you need, all the basics, who's playing tonight, who's making the plays, that's all covered. But then you're going to get, you know, the familiar bits, the food bits, the ketchup bits. All of that stuff is part of it as well. And the thing for me that puts those two things even over the top, never, ever did I feel like John Garrett was talking down to me as the audience, as someone who played in the league. It was always like he's a friend who happens to know a lot about hockey, who's having fun above everything else. And that came across. And sometimes I see other regional broadcasts in other sports, and the broadcast has an energy that can be a little unctuous. We certainly never, ever got that. And I cherish a lot of memories. And it was a big part of my childhood growing up, having John Garrett calling Canucks games. And so he'll do a few more to close out this season. And part of his announcement says he will still be popping up from time to time next season on game broadcasts. But I guess as far as being a staple, it's going to be different. Of course, wish him all the best. Hope it's a good decision for his family and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, selfishly, I think we grew just so accustomed to having him as part of the broadcast.
Spoiled.
Yeah.
Even, yeah.
It's going to be different, and people, I'm sure, will have their own memories and their own connections to it, or to him. But ultimately, pretty cool to see the outpouring for a guy who just, I think, went out and did his job for almost 25 years calling games and making people feel like they had a connection to the Canucks.
And it's more than just that he and John Shorthouse were excellent broadcasters, because they are, and they're at the top of their trade. But for me, having the privilege and the pleasure, the honor, really, to work side by side with Cheech, as I do with helping Murph out on the TV side, really got to get to know Cheech the person rather than Cheech the broadcaster. And he's honestly the nicest guy you'll ever meet. He always has a friendly smile. He'll always say hi to you. And he's just always there to crack jokes and be friendly and be warm. And never, like you said, never talks down to you. He's always at your level. And you just always felt and feel comfortable with Cheech in the room. Actually, funny enough, Cheech... back in the day, actually lived a few doors down from my godparents when their children were still quite young. And I think this is still at the time when Cheech was playing for the Canucks. And I always heard the stories of how nice a guy Cheech was, because he would always come out and play road hockey with my godparents' kids. Like, he would go out into the street and just play with the kids. And you can just tell how genuine of a person he is, and how people gravitate to him and love him. And it came across in the broadcast. That is so genuine and so real. And it's so hard to replicate. And I think that's why a lot of people felt such a connection with Cheech and with Shorty. Not just their chemistry, but when Cheech speaks, you feel good listening. It's like comfort listen. And, we're certainly all spoiled up until the end of this season. And he's definitely going to be missed on game calls. But he's still around.
Still around.
Still
yeah.
around. I can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah, absolutely. And if there's anything else we know the food bits, but baseball fan, John Garrett.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big Blue Jays fan.
Actually, before you go to baseball, I did want to say one more thing about Cheech.
Please.
Because people have heard the bits about the ketchup and the food. And you've all heard the stories of how they go to, like, dive bars and just have, like, they always have some kind of burger or something. Let me tell you, it's different hearing the story and seeing it in person. Cheech has his own bottle of ketchup by the broadcast booth so that he can put ketchup on the intermission snacks that they bring up for the broadcast crew in the second intermission. It's not like, oh, haha, funny, like Cheech likes ketchup. Cheech loves ketchup. and he loves junk food. And when you see it in action, you just kind of like, oh my goodness, like, how do you not love this guy? Like, this, it's so him. It's so uniquely him. So yeah, when you go home, pour one out. Pour a little ketchup out.
Just a squeeze bottle.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. I love Cheech. I love the guy.
Yeah, love it. And we'll enjoy the games that remain this season for that reason. But yes, John Garrett, big baseball fan. And baseball season, opening day, less than a week away. The Blue Jays announced that Alek Manoah will be their opening day starter. The Seattle Mariners announced that Luis Castillo will be their opening day starter. Of course, they traded for Castillo last season. He came in and was nails for them, dynamite. Huge pickup. And those are two teams. Of course, they played each other in the postseason last year. The Blue Jays on the wrong end of an epic collapse. The Mariners, a huge, huge comeback that was up there among the more memorable sports events of last season. But they find themselves headed into this season considered to be pretty close, pretty similar teams. If you look at the odds for the World Series at playnow.com, the Astros, the Yankees, the Braves, the Dodgers, and the Mets are the five favorites in that order for the World Series. And then you've got San Diego, Toronto, Philadelphia, Dom's Phillies, and the Mariners. Yeah, Dom, you got something?
We have an update on the Barroway case in the NHL. I'm so sorry. It's breaking news. Okay. I got to get to the hockey. Two statements, one from the Coyotes. As we mentioned earlier, Andrew Barroway, co-owner of the Arizona Coyotes, arrested in Aspen last night. He's out on bail, but he's been arrested for felony strangulation charges. The Coyotes statement: we are aware of the allegation regarding Mr. Barroway, and we are working with the league to gather further information. When we have enough information, we will make the appropriate response. Until the investigation is complete, we will have no further comment. The NHL also released a statement. The National Hockey League is aware of the arrest of Arizona Coyotes minority owner Andrew Barroway. Pending further information, he has been suspended indefinitely. Crazy.
All right. Crazy yep. stuff. There's the news update. Seems like a pretty serious story. Lot of things, a lot of details there that are rather unsavory. So the league, no choice to really make a statement there.
And, yeah.
We're not on the scene, so can't speak to it any more than that. But yeah, Don, thanks for the update.
No problem. Also, a bit of Canucks news. The Canucks have recalled Jack Rathbone for the road trip.
All right. So that would put two and two together. Christian Willanen, unlikely to play, I would assume, after he left the game against the Sharks.
Yeah, you'd have to assume. Yeah. Also, I want to see what Rathbone has developed into down in Abbotsford. Let's see if he can do anything better.
I heard the guys on the broadcast in the intermission and the panel talking about Rathbone and playing on all situations and how that's something that needs to, you know, that's going to be his spot on the team. He's not going to be the offensive defenseman. And he's at an interesting point, I think, in his developmental arc, right? And when we spend a couple of years talking about what can this guy bring? Yeah, we like his skill set, but where's the fit going to be? That time runs out for guys. And it seems like I'm not saying it's done, but yeah, this is another opportunity for him, you know, dwindling, at least in Vancouver.
What is he, 23?
Yeah.
I think.
In that range.
So this is about the time defensemen usually start to hit their stride.
Yeah.
On average, right?
It's going to happen or it isn't.
Exactly.
And it's going to be, I think, sooner than later, right?
Well, either now or over the offseason into the preseason. I mean, who else do they really have in the prospect pipeline? I mean, we all know what they're going to do in the offseason. They're going to have to bolster their defense core. And they've actually done a good job with the AHL guys. But, yeah, Jack Rathbone, one of those players that fans really had a lot of hope for, and especially when they made the first call-up,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of hype. Some fans thought he didn't really get enough of a chance. Others thought he got plenty. So I'm curious to see how he develops.
I find that a tough line, and I would say that I'm getting closer to the side that I guess I was more sympathetic toward the prospects before, that they weren't getting the chances and things like that. And as I get older and as I see more examples, I find myself more in the camp of you've got to show something, not necessarily special, but there has to be something that stands out in those opportunities. And it's not just, hey, go out there and play and make mistakes, unless your ceiling's really high.
Yeah.
You know, Quinn Hughes comes in, and it's not Quinn Hughes is not like he came in and made a bunch of mistakes and, oh, it's okay. He obviously, since his first games with the Canucks, played at a really high level. And if there were mistakes, they were small mistakes, and they were far down the list of things that he was doing. But for a guy like Rathbone, I guess the conversation becomes a little bit more about balancing those things. And it seems like overall in the American Hockey League, the idea of that development, maybe we're just closer to it now because Abbotsford's here and it's not this far thing when they were in Utica and talking about what that program was like and how they were trying to get players up. Ultimately, I think it just does come down to talent first and then somewhat fit. But I mean, you talk about Christian Willanen was a player that came into the league with some expectations, has bounced around a little bit, clearly has a skill set. Jack Rathbone clearly has a skill set, but is it going to work in the opportunities that he gets here? That's hard to say.
Tell me I'm wrong, but doesn't it not feel like this management core has a longer patience or more patience with their prospects and let them develop? It does seem to me like this is a group that would allow a Jack Rathbone more time in the AHL to really see what he can be under their tutelage, right? I think we also have to keep in mind that he came into the program at a time when prospects weren't really being properly developed and they were being rushed into the lineup a la Adam Gaudette.
Right.
And we all heard what Trent Cull had to say about that, you know, why not give him more time in the AHL? Let him properly develop down here before you force him into an NHL lineup. I do wonder if they have more of a leash with the prospects than the previous regime did.
Sure, yeah, it's a really fine line. I know the Oilers are interesting in that respect because they went from an organizational philosophy where they were playing tons of young players, a lot of high-end players, but like or high draft picks, but they weren't too concerned with guys getting all that time in the minors. And then Ken Holland comes in and he is at the other extreme of, I'm more than happy to let these big name players, these first round picks, but also just other prospects, intriguing college prospects and things like players like that stick around and play in the HL and that over seasoning. And the Canucks have not been on either extreme, I would say. I think in the case of Gaudette, it was, we don't have any center depth and he's kind of an interesting prospect and he can play with some energy. And I think in that era of Canucks hockey, they really struggled with the quote unquote identity of their bottom six. Like you even look at something like they signed Sam Gagné to a contract to fill a role. And then he really never fills the role that they signed him for. Same with giving out big contracts for bottom six players. That has been covered, you know, a ton. But Jack Rathbone gets an opportunity to get into games here with Willanen injured. Maybe Juleson's still injured as well. We will see. All right, that's it for us. Thanks to the boys behind the glass. Thanks, Dom, for helping out this week. I will be back Monday next week. We'll do a little bit of baseball talk there as well, but a busy weekend for the Canucks, a couple of games. The guys coming up here on Canucks Central. We'll set that up. Also go over last night's game as well, I'm sure. All right, thanks to everybody for listening. I'm Israel Fair. You're listening to the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.